Hello, wonderful humans. Welcome back to the TFC Audio Project. On this episode of Shop Talk, Mike and I unpack the concept of lifestyle. We go over what lifestyle means, how changing your lifestyle really means changing your identity, and how we inherit our lifestyle but can always change it. We finish with some actionable tips for each pillar of health to give you ideas on how to get started changing your lifestyle in order to benefit your health. And I really enjoyed the conversation with Mike. I hope you find the content useful and applicable in your own life, and thanks for listening. This episode of the show is brought to you by our newly launched education platform called Beam Tribe. The four letters used to spell the word BEAM stand for body, experience, awareness, and mind. And although the practice component of the platform is based on the Balance Beam tool, it also has a theory section that's loaded with videos aimed to improve your understanding of concepts related to health and also covers some actionable tools that you can start implementing in your life to make progress every day on your health journey. Beam Tribe was created to be your GPS for health, a database of videos that can show you the path and help you avoid getting lost on your health journey. If you visit beamtribe.com, we've made a bunch of the videos available for free. And if you want full access, you can officially join the community by enrolling with an annual membership. This episode of the show is also brought to you by our family of partner brands listed at thefootcollective.com, who have kindly offered discounts or free gifts to our community and also support TFC by helping to fund the development and hosting of TFC app. We've developed relationships over time with brands doing awesome work and who align with TFC on the mission to create products that are good for your health and good for the planet. Check out thefootcollective.com, click on the partner brands tab for a list of all the brands that offer you discounts. And by purchasing using those links or codes, it helps us keep TFC app free and evolving without ever having to load it with ads. That's it for sponsors. Let's dig into this episode. Hope you enjoy.
It's the TFC Audio Project.
Hello, wonderful humans. Nick and Mike here, back for another episode of Shop Talk. And today we're going to dig deep into the concept of lifestyle. I think, you know, lifestyle is a word that gets thrown around a lot today. And some of the biggest problems we face in health are lifestyle related illnesses. So, you know, we wanted to clarify the term, improve some awareness, and finish by giving some practical tips on starting to change your lifestyle. Because I think switching to a healthy lifestyle is something everyone knows we need to that they need to do, but I think very few people actually understand what that means when you get down to the nuts and bolts of how do we start implementing changes. So, you know, maybe a good place to start is, what is lifestyle? Like, you hear that word all the time. And I think if you ask 10 different people, what does lifestyle mean? You might get 10 different answers, or you might get some blank stares, because people use the word, and this happens with some words where it's like, it means different things to different people in different contexts, which is fine. But I think it's probably time to get sort of a broad definition that we can all kind of accept as general enough to apply to all of us.
Yeah, and because even in the realm of lifestyle studies, there's different viewpoints on it. So I think one of the simple definitions that I found was the way in which a person or group lives. So that's kind of the base level part of it, the way in which you live, or a way or style of living. And then if you go into sociology, they define it as the interests, behaviors, orientations, and opinions of an individual, group, or culture. And this would include like also values, outlooks on life, preferences. Basically, you're like a schema, like a broad schema of like looking and functioning within the world, what that means. So it might be completely different to one culture versus another, in different one country versus another, in one neighborhood versus another, one socioeconomic status versus another. So I think it goes deep into all of these other things, but the simple definition would be like a way or style of living.
Yep. And I think the style of living that you adopt is made up of the many individual behaviors that string together to create that style of living. Right. So yes, it's a global style of living, but it also boils down to all the individual behaviors that we put together, all the individual behaviors that we do. And these essentially combine to create a style of living. And that style of living is actually the primary determinant of your health. Mm-hmm. So it's important.
And if we look at like underneath the behaviors, like what's driving those behaviors? So that's where we can get into like, well, somebody's values might be completely different than another person's, and then that's why they're behaving a certain way. So it's like, that's where we got to get at, like, what formed these behavior patterns, right? And it might be like as simple as like, you grew up in a very poor neighborhood in a specific area of a specific country, and everybody around you is behaving a certain way, and that's programmed you deeply. Mm-hmm. From like, if you look at the research from like age zero to seven, you're getting like just subconsciously programmed the whole time.
Right.
So that's where you might just be living in accordance with your programming. And that came from, where'd it come from? It came from your family and your parents primarily. It came from your siblings, your extended family, your grandparents who passed it on to your parents, your broader community. So that's kind of like your friends too, once you start having friends. But I think those first integral years of life are form the trajectory of people, people's like behavior patterns. And then from there, they might find themselves 30 years later behaving in certain ways. And then they might find themselves in poor health and be like, it's hard. Like, I don't know what's going on. Right. And it's
right.
It's just,
it's not a single thing. It's the accumulation of decades.
Yeah.
Of many behaviors done a certain way. And you're right. Like that's, you only know what you know, right? You only can know what you're taught by your parents. I mean, today is a different age where you have access to way more information, but up until you're about 7 years old, you're not playing around with the phone looking, Googling shit.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll change. I don't know.
You're downloading information from your surroundings.
Exactly. So really in a way, and you did a really good post that talks about how, you know, lifestyle is inherited. Mm-hmm. In the general scheme of things, where it's passed down generationally through your family and from your immediate environment when you're growing up. But lifestyle can always be changed.
Yeah.
So you're not, you are created with a certain lifestyle, but you're not defined by that for the rest of your life. You have the ability to get, if your family lives a very unhealthy lifestyle and you've adopted that and you've just been, you've downloaded that software because that's all you were exposed to, you're not stuck with that programming for the rest of your life, but it can be an effort. Some people that have a really unhealthy, you know, understanding of lifestyle, or were forced under certain circumstances when they were younger to live an unhealthy lifestyle. And we'll talk about what that even means in a bit. I think you can always change it.
For sure. But the concept of inheritance is key. And if you break that apart, some people might think that it means like genetic. And in some sense it is, if we talk about like epigenetics, yeah. Right? But I think that if you inherit it because you're actually, your brain is actually developing in a way that your family and everything around you is kind of forming your existence, your identity, your physiology, right. And everything.
Yep.
So it's like, it's not necessarily genetic, like encoded in your genes from day one, but it's inherited deeply.
Right.
Those are two different things. And
you're not genetically predetermined to keep that up, but
yeah.
You know, some people have a deeper hole to dig out of based on their circumstances, but everyone is capable of change.
Exactly. So if we have, one of our main points is lifestyle is inherited and it's, you're formed by your situation and the people who you're surrounding yourself with. So that your scheme of living is highly determined by that initially. And the other big point that we can get to is like lifestyle is a big determinant of your overall health. So because if you even look into the research, lifestyle related health problems have been studied by health organizations around the world and saying like right now we have most of our health issues are lifestyle related. You see that in the scientific research. Yeah. Even. So we say, okay, it's inherited. And then also it's a big determinant of your health. But then you said it can be changed. So mm-hmm. Therefore, lifestyle can be shaped and changed and it can determine your health in a better way.
Yes.
So a lot of health is in your control is kind of the general thing we're trying to get across too.
Yes. And, you know, we can talk about lifestyle diseases. The top causes, I just did like a really super quick search, but the top causes of disability were listed here as arthritis, which it's osteoarthritis. We're not talking about rheumatoid arthritis, but even rheumatoid arthritis, I would say, you know, we won't get into the nuts and bolts of that, but autoimmune. It is a lifestyle related problem. So arthritis, back pain. I love how they write like literally one single area of pain. They write a symptom as like a disease. It's so crazy. Arthritis, back pain, heart disease, cancer, depression, and diabetes. These are all lifestyle related. These are all, you know, I would argue if you understand them deeply, lifestyle related and preventable. For the sure. most part, like 99% of these cases are preventable.
And one study I looked at was basically saying that most of these causes of like all the causes you listed right there are attributable to some main factors. And this one study looked at unhealthy diet, lack of physical activity.
Yep.
And then it also listed alcohol use and tobacco use. And again, those are, I would add to that, but those four things alone are highly preventable and changeable.
Right.
And those are causing the majority of things that you just listed. So it comes down to your style of living. Mm-hmm. And what is in your style of living? Like, what is composed of that?
And your style of living is dynamic. It is constantly, tomorrow you can live differently if you want to. Now, I'm not saying that's easy, because we get into these, you know, programming ruts where it's difficult to, the longer something has been done for, the more deeply ingrained those habits are. And most of the behaviors we do during the day are not conscious behaviors that we're doing on purpose. We're doing them because we've done them for a thousand reps, and that's just what we're doing.
So let's talk about that a bit, like, because we talked about age, like 0 to 7 or whatever, 0 to 10, whatever it is, your earlier childhood. Once you start hanging out with other people, that becomes also a big shaping force in kind of like your health trajectory. And if we go, like, let's say we choose that kind of middle teenage period, you start hanging out with friends. So that's when you might actually be hanging out with different people. Now, a lot of people end up hanging out with the same people based on where you're from, based on who your parents are friends with.
Right.
So you still end up getting kind of these same shaping forces. But you will see when people start making these weird transformations, when they start to get a bit more independence away from their parents, that can be a primary shaping force in changing their health around. Mm-hmm. And then if we kind of go past the, you know, when you leave the house, when you're more of an independent adult, then we can see like really radical changes that are like, oh, that's an example that somebody came from this neighborhood in this city, but they're this person now. Right. And look who they're hanging around with. Their friends are all this group. And I think like if we use two little examples of that, like look at, it's like a schema. Lifestyle almost forms a schema when we look at it from like a group standpoint.
And how would you, for someone that doesn't know what schema means, how would you define schema?
It's just like a construct or a framework.
Okay.
So it's like it's a group of like things, entities that behavior patterns, values that people live through. It's like a lens that people see the world through. Mm-hmm. So if you look at like two examples I wrote down is like everyone knows what this looks like. What is like a surf culture or surf lifestyle? You can just picture that. Like you go to the beaches in Hawaii, you see a bunch of people generally physically fit, generally care about their health. They care about nature. They're always in the waves. They're in the sun. They're having, drinks together. Very community based, healthy based, like fun, play, enjoyable. You kind of know
low
those
stress.
People, like surf bum. Like you look at that person and you're like, why do all surf bums kind of like talk the same, look the same, act the same? It's kind of like it's a true. Thing. That's like the schema. And then if you look at like a yoga lifestyle, it's like, okay, that's like another construct. When people find yoga, then they start like, you think about like meditation, community, healthy eating, spirituality, like all of these things. And even again, they look a certain way. They talk a certain way. Even their tone of voice often is the same or similar. Now it doesn't have to be that way, but these are kind of like schemas that people can fall into.
Yeah, like templates almost.
It's like a template of living. So what if you grow up, but you found this group, and this is where it's like highly related to these, your group identity as well, that can be a shaping driving force. And then the opposite is true. If you see somebody who's, why is it that a lot of unhealthy people hang out together?
Right.
Right. Is it because, and it like, if you're trying to be healthy, but the people who you spend most of your time with are all behaving in ways that would shape you into somebody unhealthy and they're all unhealthy, it's going to be a lot harder to escape that.
Yeah. And like behaviors are contagious. Mark Hyman always says like, obesity is contagious, because if you hang around with people who are overweight and obese, you have a significantly higher likelihood of becoming overweight and obese. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we love talking about how like a virus right now is contagious. We love talking about how a cold or bacteria is contagious, but behaviors are immensely contagious, right?
Yeah.
Even things like kindness. If you're nice to someone, they have a much higher likelihood of being nice to the next person they interact with. And on the flip side, if you're a shitty person to someone, if you're mean or angry and in an interaction with someone, they have a higher likelihood of also mirroring that in their next interaction. So behaviors are contagious, and the people you hang around with oftentimes are chosen because their lifestyle aligns or their group identity aligns with yours. But when it comes to lifestyle change, that can be one of the big forms of resistance, is like if everyone you're around is living this certain way of life, and this is a deeply, you know, you're connected to this group, then it can be hard. You know, you either the group changes together or you need to essentially pick a different group, which is hard.
It's almost like you can look at it as like a health, you can have like a health node or like a disease node.
Yeah.
And that's like the people you hang out with. So if you can even like plop yourself into a health node, you're going to be, meaning that people around you are living in ways that are healthy. Like, for example, you plop yourself into like a yoga lifestyle mode. Even, you might not want to be that, but even if you just did that, you would over time be more likely to resonate and could be contagious with that. So I think that's an interesting point, is like if we all try to find healthier nodes, meaning groups of people, mm-hmm. or if we can start one ourselves, because you can take it upon yourself,
right?
A lot harder.
Right.
But
and you can be the node in that group of people you're in that might be unhealthy, but just simply uh-huh. don't know how to or what to do in order to be healthy. And you know, we talk about this in the Footner program a lot. Every single person is a leader. Mm-hmm. Can be a leader. You can lead your family. You can lead one other. If you are doing something different for a specific reason, you can, your best friend can start to do those things, and you're theoretically being a leader, right? But yeah. just through the behaviors you're doing. If behavior is contagious and you make the conscious choice to behave more in alignment with health, then every single person that sees you, including the person at the grocery store that observes what you're buying from the shelf, you are technically having an effect on signaling. Everyone else. Yeah, it's like this ripple effect. And we ripple and affect way more people than what we realize based on how we behave.
Yeah. That's like all lifestyle stuff, right?
Right. So. And I think people, like you talked about, you know, the surf lifestyle, yogi lifestyle. I think sometimes people think that when you adopt a template, you got to go full on. Like you have to download the entire template. It's like, okay, I like yoga. I meditate every day, but I don't want to eat kale salads for every single meal. And I think that's something people think is part of that template.
All in.
Yeah. It's like black and white thinking, classic. But you know, if you look at every template and expose yourself to these different lifestyles, look at every template like a menu that has a bunch of items. And first you got to learn what those items are. Okay. A person who lives a yoga lifestyle does things A, B, C, D, E. Well, I'm just going to pick B because I like that and I enjoy it and it resonates with me. But C and D, I'm not a big fan of those. You can pick and choose. And the more lifestyles you're exposed to, the more you can create your own menu.
Based on who you truly are.
Like and who just, you want to become.
Yeah. It's not, I think it becomes like an easy thing where it's like,
right.
It's kind of like the same thing as like, it's a more radical version of like, I'm going to try this diet out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm this person now. And you see people that jump back and forth between different, they'll plop themselves into the yoga community and then they'll plop themselves into other communities. Mm-hmm. That's okay. If it's doing the right thing, that's great. But is it who you truly are? Do you like every part of that? Or like you say, do you not like some parts of it? And you're just kind of like trying to become that type of thing.
Right. So, and I think that, you know, our medical system knows that lifestyle is the biggest contributor to people's problems. The problem is the medical system is not prepared. Doctors are not taught how to help people, you know, to even understand the lifestyle factors that contribute, let alone how to help people change their lifestyle. So they know what the problem is, but the solutions that they're learning are not in alignment with the actual problems we're facing. And that's like this problem where it's okay, it's probably shifting, but it's shifting so slowly that are we going to be so behind the curve that things are not going to change in terms of outcomes? So, you know, starting to provide more information is great, right? If you go see your doctor and your doctor's like, okay, you need to sleep more, you should probably meditate, you need to exercise more. Great. They're giving you very general lifestyle tips.
And that's not a part of your lifestyle, right?
Right. But if you're not the kind of person who feels deeply that those are important enough to do, then you're not going to do them. And even if you are, you're like, okay, I got to exercise more. Well, what the hell does that mean? Like, do I have to go to the gym every day for an hour? I don't like that. That's not who I am. So they give general advice when they do even talk about lifestyle related factors, but they don't give the specific guidance and they don't actually help people understand how to change, because having the information is great. But I think most people know I should probably be eating healthier. I should probably be sleeping more. I should probably move more or exercise more, but they don't actually know how to enact the changes. Like they don't know the path to take in order to do those changes, which we'll talk about because that's important.
and they're like fundamentally separated from that. Because even though they might, it comes down to that like identity thing where they're not, they don't identify as that person yet. So, right. So there's like a separation, like this is me. And then that person's healthy. That's not me though. I'm this person now.
Right.
And they might not even know that's possible. They might see that it's a weird thing because they probably somewhere inside them know it's possible, but a lot of it is that they don't necessarily, they just can't fathom being that person. Because right. It's so radically different than what they currently are. Mm-hmm. So when a doctor might say to you, you need to be, when they say you need to meditate, you need to do, they're essentially saying you need to be like that person, this fictional character that I just created.
Right.
But they just can't fathom that. So maybe that's a good time It's too far. So how do we start to make these small changes to start to,
Healthy lifestyle? Because I think, you know, what is it? People say, oh, yeah, I live a healthy lifestyle. What the hell does that actually mean? And I think, you know, I tried to think about this a lot this morning and sort of like distill it down to like the really simple stuff. And I think at its core, you know, healthy lifestyle means making the right decisions every day, right? All the decisions that you make, making the right decision in terms of aligning it with health. But I think, you know, it really means a healthy lifestyle means living in alignment with your biology, right? Yeah. Using your body for what it was adapted to do. Because if you do, you know, if you use something for what it's built for, then it's going to function best. If you take a Dodge Caravan on a rally track, it's not going to do very well because it's not built to do that. Mm-hmm. You need a race car, right? So we got to use the body for what it was designed to do, which is move all day, which is eat real nourishing food to act as fuel for a body, which is avoid constant exposure to toxins, right? Whether that's toxic interactions or toxic food or toxic positions that you adopt all day long, like sitting in a chair for 10 hours. So living in alignment with your biology, making the right decisions. And I also think that people need to realize that a healthy lifestyle is an ideal. It is not a thing that you achieve. It's something you strive towards every day, but you never actually reach because you should never stop trying to improve.
Yeah. And it's like you say, it's like what you eat. It's managing your energy. It's feeling good. It's fundamentally feeling good.
And people want to feel good. Everyone wants to feel good.
What does feel good mean? It can mean you might feel good based on a variety of different conditions than the person beside you. For you, it's how do you feel good? So that's like body, and it's also like your mental health and your mind and your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So it's like having meaningful relationships, friends, family, like hobbies, skills. Do you have things that are you're learning or excited to learn about? Things that like get your mind going. You're like, oh, that's cool. Like things that spark your interest. Do you have that in your life? A lot of people don't. A lot of people are just kind of going day by day and doing the things that they think they should be doing and the things that their job entails. And then they just go and like entertain themselves with something on TV. There's no things that are like, wow, that's interesting. I want to look into that.
Right.
And it can be, you know, like meaningful work, feeding the mind, connection with nature is a big one. So like, do you actually go outside? Do you have things that you like? It might not be surfing and it might not be rock climbing, but what is it for you? Do you like biking? Do you like hiking? And then, you know, like finding peace, I think is a big one, like peace of mind. Like, do you have some sort of, and that might come in the form of like a meditation practice, but it's like, are you always stressed? And peace is like a weird term, but like, are you at peace or are you always anxious? A lot of people are just dying of anxiety. So can you find things that allow you to just kind of, be peaceful, more hours of the day?
And I think that, you know, even just to bring that back is the way to be happy is to do the behaviors that your body is designed to do so you can get the natural reward chemicals from your body saying you're doing the right shit.
And it feels good.
And I think if you live in alignment with biology, you get the right neurochemistry exuding itself to say you're doing the right stuff, right? There's a reason that there's a reason it feels good to have quality sleep. There's a reason it feels good to have sex. This is your body's way of saying, yes, keep doing it. You're doing the right stuff. I think feel good should have a little asterisk saying feels good over the long run. Because eating a cake feels great for some people, not everyone, but feels great for 5 minutes. And it feels terrible for 3 hours. So it's like net feel good. Like what is the net effect of those behaviors?
And you know it's not good. It's not exactly.
Like, well, sometimes, and that brings up another point. Sometimes people don't know. Like literally, someone says, I want to eat like a healthy person, they need to understand, have a basic understanding of what does a healthy person eat? Because I think a lot of people don't have the information.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then they don't know. There's that disconnect again. They say that, well, their whole house is filled with food that is unhealthy.
Right.
And they don't ever go about changing it.
Yeah. And so then, maybe let's talk about lifestyle change now. Because that's
one
that's
other thing I would note is that, like, what is your relationship? Like, maybe a couple things. What is your relationship with substances such as, like, drugs and alcohol?
Which is a drug.
Essentially, yeah. So what is your relationship with things like that? And then that kind of brings up the, what is your relationship with technology? And then within both those points, do you have any, can we look at addictive behaviors and figure out why those are happening? Because a lot of people's healthy behaviors and habits are often, unhealthy behaviors and habits are often addictions. So like if you're just consumed by social media all day and that's unhealthy for you, and that might be a huge roadblock in you to have a healthy lifestyle, or mm-hmm. you might be abusing alcohol. Like, why are you doing that? Even though you're trying your best to try, right? So it's kind of everything. And we might say that having a glass of wine each night with your family and friends as you kind of have conversations and laugh is actually a really good part of your lifestyle. Yeah. But we can't lie to ourselves.
We can't say that when you drink 12 beers on a weekend night and then your next day you feel like absolutely terrible, slightly depressed, anxious, physically ill. That's not a good relationship.
No.
Tony Riddle always talks about these fundamental needs. So as humans, we have base fundamental needs. Like even if you think Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, we have the basic need for security, safety, movement, you know, all these connection, all these fundamental things that we need in order to have our bodies and our minds run like they're supposed to. And when you live in a culture that's engineered around basically not meeting our fundamental needs.
Yeah.
Right. We have a culture that's engineered around being sedentary, where we sit in chairs, we don't move. Movement is a fundamental need. So there's a void there. There's suffering created by not meeting a fundamental need. We have, you know, connection to others, real in-person nourishing connection is a fundamental need. And if it's something you don't get through social media, so if you're not getting that, but you're tricking your brain into thinking short-term that you're getting that, but you're not, then there's a void. There's suffering. And you're not meeting that fundamental need. So a lot of these addictions, I think, come from trying to fill the void with something, some sort of tool, whether it be alcohol, you know, trying to distract yourself from the suffering that void that is created by that void. And what people aren't thinking is, well, how do I fill that void? How do I get that fundamental need to be met? Because then I actually don't require this substance to try and fill the void or ease the suffering, because the suffering goes away. We got to help people meet their fundamental needs instead of instead of focusing on the bad thing they're doing. It's like, what good do you get from that? And why isn't that good happening in your life already?
Yeah.
Gabor Maté does a beautiful job at explaining, like, we suck at dealing with addiction. We understand addiction way better now than before, but all we do is punish people that are already suffering. It's crazy.
Yeah. He always says, like, why? It shouldn't be why the addiction. It should be why the pain.
Right.
Because
the addiction is soothing the pain.
Yeah. And one other, before we move on, like one other thing I think is huge for people's healthy lifestyle is a thing that we often feel guilty about in modern society is having like a real sense of play, adventure, and recreation.
Mm-hmm.
And
good point.
People often feel guilty for it. And like if you think like, oh, that's like, what do you mean play? So you need to be.
Yeah, I don't have time for play.
Yeah. And a lot of these really happy people, like what are they doing when they're out surfing? That's their playing. That's right. Their adventure. What is it when you go like backcountry skiing or something? That's play. That's adventure. It's recreation. It's all that combined. So people who have these groups, even I find that's a big thing is like when you find people who have groups of friends, let's say, who do things together, go on camping trips together or whatever, that's a big component of lifestyle as well.
Right.
So.
And these behaviors almost chunk together. It's like, it's interesting how people who like to go in nature are also people who like to move.
Yeah.
Or people who like to play. Like there's these clumps of behaviors, these bins of behaviors that you often find this like pattern of certain behaviors being with certain groups.
Yeah.
And like I said, you don't necessarily have to adopt one specific bin, but I think if you expose yourself to people who live a certain lifestyle, you get a really broad perspective. You have a bigger menu to choose from.
Exactly.
And that's if good. We talk about, and you know, I think another thing too, of people knowing the information, okay, I'm a person who knows I should be eating healthy. I understand what eating healthy actually means, and it's really simple. But my life is engineered in such a way that I don't know how to design in healthy eating. And so I eat like an unhealthy person. I know I should be eating like a healthy person. And this incongruence between the person who I want to be and the person I am is a massive source of suffering.
Yeah.
And I think some of the substance stuff or some of this dependence on things like sugar or alcohol or cannabis or whatever, you know, name the behavior that essentially is helping to soothe that suffering. You know, part of it is I think sometimes when people don't eat healthy when they know they should, they see it as a character flaw and they beat themselves up over it. When in reality, it's not a character flaw or a discipline problem. It's a design problem. You haven't
lifestyle design problem.
You haven't understood how to engineer and how to design in those behaviors.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, a lot of people start by just shooting way too high. They're like, I'm going to never eat sugar. It's like, well, that's not a good start.
And it's like you leave yourself. It can, like you say, it's not necessarily, they might know what they need to do, but then you catch them waking up, you catch them in between meetings, eating something quickly, super stressed when they're trying to not buying healthy things, not giving themselves the time, hanging around with unhealthy people,
right.
flying from city to city and eating at airports all the time. Like, so it's a design problem. Like you say, it's not a not knowing problem.
And it's not a character problem because that's the biggest thing people beat themselves up for. And so like, we'll talk about behavior design and what that even means. Cause it's really simple. It's just understanding how behaviors are, like the psychology of why humans behave the way we do. And most of it has to do with the environment and understanding how to plan, like even just understanding the machinery of a behavior. Like a behavior happens when motivation, when your ability to do a behavior, and when some sort of prompt come together in a perfect storm to create the environment where a behavior happens. And if you understand those three components and can kind of adjust, level up and level down those variables, then you can essentially engineer behaviors to be able to be really easy, really enjoyable. And if you know your core values of what behaviors you want to align with, because you know the kind of person you are or want to become, then most decisions that people have to make during the day are no longer even decisions. If you deeply identify as a healthy person, well, at the airport, all the unhealthy choices are not even choices to make anymore. They're just not, you're not the kind of person that eats that shit. So yeah. You don't even have to decide not to. It's just something you don't do. It's not even an option.
You don't see the yogi smoking crack.
Yeah.
Because it's not
a decision.
That's not what happens. Right. Or even like binge drinking on weekends with their shirts off at, like they might, but like you say, I think once you start to design, it's self-reinforcing because then as that identity starts to change, then the behaviors just start manifesting themselves.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it is if you can use the same developmental process that initially shaped you later in your life, if you think about, you're shaped because you're just in an environment that shapes you, and you're kind of downloading all of the behaviors and all of the vibes from that environment. So if you place yourself in a different environment purposefully, or hang out with certain people, you're basically just allowing yourself to download the behaviors, vibes, attitudes, feel, values of these other people too.
Right.
So that's one helpful thing. So you don't have to do it just yourself. A lot of people feel like it's just they're separate entities from everybody else. But as we know, we're very social creatures. So use other people to help you along the way too.
Right. And seek out the people, the groups that basically reflect the kind of behaviors you want to do. Uh-huh. And then that immediately puts you in an environment where it's way easier to do those behaviors. So, you know, lifestyle change, if we break that down, it's really just like reprogramming. And I think, you know, at its core, lifestyle change is identity change, right? We talked about that, where like you're basically, if you're living a different lifestyle, you're essentially becoming a different person.
value change too.
Like, it's complete value change. I think lifestyle change actually starts with clarifying what matters.
Yeah.
So when you know what matters and the values you want to adopt as things that you want to live up to, right? Like, these values might not be things that are right now in your present snapshot, but are things that you want to live up to. So I value my health. Okay, well, if health is your primary value, then that means taking care of yourself. Well, what does taking care of yourself mean? What are some examples of behaviors you can do to take care of yourself and that you can actually sustainably implement in your life? Well, I can do 2 squats a day. Well, what the hell is 2 squats a day going to do? That's tiny. Well, it's going to do 2 more squats worth of progress than you're doing right now, because you're not doing any.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, decide on the values and what actually matters, right? If health matters, if good relationships matter, if your family matters. Like, you hear this all the time. Oh, what matters to you most? My family. Well, how much time do you spend with your family? Not as much as I'd like to. Well, why? Because the world is not conspiring to stop you from spending time with your family. You're just not prioritizing what matters.
Yeah.
When people say I don't have time, what they really say is I don't prioritize. So if you write down and deeply align with being clear on what you prioritize, it's really easy to decide on the behaviors you should be doing, because you already know what matters. And all behaviors should be derivatives of what truly matter. So I think it starts with clarity, and then it starts with gathering some awareness. Like, you need some information.
Yeah.
Right. You're like, okay, I want to be healthy. Well, what does a healthy person eat? Because I have no idea. Well, I got to figure out some information. But then after the getting clear, finding your basic information, then it's like, how do I start creating change? And I think that is that third element is where most people stumble, I think.
Yeah. And that's where you start at the smallest building blocks that you can find. Like you say, it might be 2 squats. It might be taking a walk once a week, and then you start, or maybe a 5-minute walk every day, and then building that up over time.
Right.
And then
it might just mean putting your shoes
a person
on.
Then you're the person out there that your neighbors see walking. You're like, oh, my neighbor's out there walking every morning. Interesting.
There you go.
And then that starts to define you. And it's like, if we look at one little side note is like, if we look at somebody in a blue zone, people always say, like, we're always looking at, what is it they do? Is it because they eat seaweed? Is it because they, they're acting and living like people in blue zones do.
Yeah.
And that's creating their health. So
the
it's
environment
like
they're going out for their walks. Patterns.
Exactly. But back to this, it's like, start small and then just note how it feels. And like, what was that researcher that you on behavioral design that you were?
BJ Fogg.
Yeah. So
he's a friggin' G.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with behavior design now, because I think that's the rate limiting step.
That's the thing. He was saying, like, emotion creates the real change when you attach the emotion to the thing.
Positive emotions create habits.
Yeah. Because the motivation is one thing, and you might feel really good one day. And you might be like, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to be healthy. And then the next day you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm in a shit mood today. I just feel like sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
But if you do things and then you feel good about them, it's going to reinforce them over time.
Yep.
And the feeling good about them is the thing. And that's the feeling good. We come back to the feel, go by feel. And a lot of people have trouble going by feel because we're not really taught about that. And it feels like woo woo. And it's like, oh, what feels good? It's like ephemeral. We can't trust our feelings, and these are our intuitions. Or these are our deep, right. We're very intellectualized these days, and like, what feels good to you? People don't even know what feels good to them. So, but once you start noticing that, like, do a thing and then notice how it makes you feel. Mm-hmm. And then if you taking that walk made you feel good, then be like, wow, you can even bring that into your consciousness and really highlight and be like, that made me feel really good. That's interesting. Cool.
Well, like a prime example of a behavior design flaw is, okay, someone goes to the doctor and they're overweight and they don't move very much. The doctor says, you need to exercise. And the person says, well, what's better? Should I go to the gym for an hour every day, or should I go for a 5-minute walk? And at first glance, the doctor might say, well, you know, you need more than 5 minutes a day, so you should probably go to the gym for an hour. So that person who, you know, option A is go to the gym on a treadmill in a weird ass environment with no one else, doing something you don't actually want to do, but you feel you have to do, right? Mm-hmm. That you're like literally miserable as you're driving there, because you know it's going to be a shitty hour of just boringness. You don't feel good during, because you're like, well, I think this is making me healthy, but this is like a terrible time. I don't like this. versus the 5-minute walk that you might go on with someone. You have a conversation, you're exposed to nature. Well, guess what? If you think going to the gym for an hour and doing shit that you don't want to do is sustainable, you're kidding yourself. But the 5-minute walk is doable.
And what do you, maybe playing Frisbee in the park with your kids is fun.
Yeah.
Or something. So you have to attach movement to the positive emotion too.
Yes.
And then it becomes self-sustaining, or pick up that activity, or like you like to go on hikes or whatever it is. Maybe you like to just throw around logs in your backyard.
Sure.
That's cool.
Or rocks, whatever.
Right? Carry rocks. Like do something that's weird and it makes you feel like funny and good.
Yeah.
And then
better yet, do it with someone that you can enjoy doing it with. And you know, you brought up a good point where motivation always ebbs and flows, right? We have periods of time where we're highly motivated, periods of time where we're very, very low in terms of motivation in the moment. So to rely on motivation as the primary factor stimulating a behavior to happen is inherently a design flaw, because it's not a good way of doing it. When you're not motivated, you're not going to do it. When you are motivated, you will, but that doesn't create a consistent behavior change.
Yeah.
So you need to take into account, okay, my motivation, let's just pretend that my motivation is going to be low to medium on average, right? And motivation was one of those three elements. So we have motivation, ability, and prompt. So if my motivation is going to be low, well, my ability to do this needs to be really high. So it has to be really convenient to do. It has to be something that's not super hard for me to do, which means that's where the starting small part comes in. And then I need to have a prompt. So something to remind me to do this behavior. Because most of the time, people that don't do a behavior is not because they tried not to do it. They just didn't have something to remind them to do it, because we have so much shit to remember during the day. You need some sort of prompt. Mm-hmm. You know, an example for this with meditation is, okay, well, I have a high motivation to meditate. I know it's good for me, but I've tried it a few times for like 20 minutes and I suck at it and it's not very fun. So my ability is low. My motivation is high, but I'm getting demotivated because I'm continuously failing and I have negative emotions associated with meditation because it's really hard to do 20 minutes. So an easy way to change that is, well, do a minute instead of 20. Now your ability is shot through the roof because a minute's really easy to do. Mm-hmm. You're doing it every day. You're succeeding. So it's increasing your motivation. And maybe putting an alarm on your phone in the morning or a meditation cushion somewhere that you pass every day is your prompt to make sure you remember to meditate. So now it's really obvious, really easy, and you're highly motivated because you're succeeding. You're getting a positive emotion. You're going to do that shit every day. Mm-hmm. And then it's really easy to scale up from a minute to 2 minutes, from 2 minutes to 3 minutes, because you've already embedded this behavior. You've designed this behavior into your life. So it's really...
I mean, sometimes when you're feeling... That's what happens with me too, is like... sometimes when you are really motivated that day, then you might do more of the thing.
Right, which is fine.
And when you're not, you might do... But you're still doing it.
Exactly. And it's showing up every day and doing it that reinforces continuing to do it, because you're feeling good. People need to be made to feel good for things that they want to do.
Yeah.
And by succeeding, by winning and doing something you set out to do, it makes you feel really good. It reinforces positive emotions. And those positive emotions are what carries that behavior forward.
I agree.
So, I think, you know, if you don't understand, so those are kind of, that's kind of the ladder of behavior change. It's like behavior, lifestyle is a combination of many behaviors. In order to adopt a quote unquote healthy lifestyle, you have to know, number one, what those behaviors are. And then number two, work to be able to implement them slowly, trickle feed them into your life.
And you have to value, like you say, underneath that, you have to value a healthy lifestyle.
Right.
You have to actually think about it and be like, I actually value taking care of myself or having energy and just feeling good. Like that's something I want. I want that. And then you have to identify, well, if you don't have it right now and there's a gap, well, how do we go? And then we get into behavior from there.
Information and then, and then behavior. And I think underneath all the, anytime you're trying to change something, it's always good to take a playful experimentation approach to it, where it's like, okay, I think I'd like to do this behavior because I think this connects with my value of health. But guess what? If it's really hard, maybe it just wasn't the right behavior.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to just troubleshoot and reevaluate. So I think writing things down, like I call it a log instead of a journal, because I think journaling is just like the term's been beaten to death. People are like, I don't want a journal. But if you just take a log, it's like, okay, well, today I did this. I wanted to do this. I wasn't able to. And here's why. So then tomorrow I can read, okay, well, I'm going to try this tomorrow. So being able to like document how you're doing. And I think that just gives clarity to be able to troubleshoot, where it's like taking a systematic approach. Well, if this didn't work, I'm going to change this and try it a different way tomorrow. Because if you try the same thing and think it's going to turn out differently, it's kind of silly.
And another concept is, if you can create data points that are outside of your current identity or lifestyle, then it gives you insight into knowing that I can actually do that.
Right.
And it might be some just do like doing like really different things that you wouldn't normally do. If you normally sleep in on a Saturday until like 9 or 10, what if you one Saturday you woke up at like 5 a.m. and you went on like a morning run and nobody was out and you're like, whoa, this is really weird. Mm-hmm. You're like, that's I'm doing something that my that I wouldn't normally do. And then you do something completely different. What if you make like so if you have all these little experiments, you're like, oh, I can do something that's completely outside of the realm of what I would normally do.
Right.
And it doesn't mean you have to do that every day. It's just showing you that the possibility of doing drastically different things is within my capability.
Right.
And then you can kind of scale it back and say, well, how do I implement something that kind of works for me that I can feasibly do? Because that was really cool. That feeling I got with being out at 5 a.m. on a Saturday. I'm not going to do that right away, but that was cool. So, I went on a 3-hour hike alone into like this hiking trail, or like I went on a full day excursion by myself, into this mountain. I would never do that. That felt really good. That was really weird. I almost had like a spiritual experience when I was up there. Maybe I don't do that every day, but again, that's a possible for me.
Right. It's almost like you're expanding your continuum of what you're confident you can do. So that now, okay.
Go extreme.
Now, yeah. Try something extreme. And you know what? If you fail, that's okay. But if you're able to do it, then you're like, shit, well, if I scale this back to like 10%, I can do that every day. Because I really like doing that. So if I like the feeling that I got by doing this behavior, how do I scale it back and get more of this behavior in my life? Right? Mm-hmm. Like really, behavior change is like, do more of the things you like to do.
Yeah.
And give yourself the opportunity to find more things that you might end up liking doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because feeling good, like feeling physically and mentally good is positively reinforcing. It's just people, I don't think people know what they're missing.
Yeah.
Well, health, I think, is just making positive changes on a regular basis.
And it's feeling physically and mentally good. That's a big component of it, right?
I agree. And you might have knee problems, you might be overweight, but you can still feel good because making progress is a beautiful way to make yourself feel good. So if if you're overweight or you're obese and one day instead of choosing, you know, the sugary food that you eat every day at a certain time, because when you get home, you feel miserable, you're tired, you just want to eat something to make you feel a bit better. If one day you don't do that and instead you eat something else that you didn't even know, oh my gosh, pineapple is delicious. So I'm going to eat pineapple instead of eating a tub of Häagen-Dazs. Well, all of a sudden you feel good because you're doing what aligns with your values and you're also still eating something that tastes good.
And that's that data point and you can learn from it.
Exactly. And you have to experiment because people can't tell you exactly what to do. You have to feel confident enough to experiment with different things to find out what might work.
That's the action part.
Yeah, because information without action is useless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think taking action is the hardest part for people, not because they don't want to, because they don't know how to. So I think one thing let's talk about is sustainable when it comes to lifestyle change, sustainable change versus like going on a lifestyle diet. Like a New Year's resolution for most people is a lifestyle diet. They're like, I want to change a bunch of things. I want to be a totally different person starting on January 1st. And I'm going to make all these radical changes. And I think if you look at that through a behavior design lens, it's inherently flawed from the get-go.
And I think that it somewhere inside people, it often, I don't know if people actually think that they're actually going to continue to live that way, or a lot of people are, because it's like a 30-day challenge or like a whatever challenge, like a 90-day challenge, they think that a weird part of it's just going to end and then what happens happens then?
Right.
It doesn't mean like they're going to continue. There's
built
there's
a fail from day one.
Yeah, there's a beginning and end to it, and then, well, what happens next? So it can't be that, because it's just shitload of pressure and then pressure build up as you're trying to maintain it, and then if they're feeling like they don't like it the whole time, again, that's what we just talked about. Like, it's gonna boil over.
Well, I think it has this reverberating negative effect, because when they fail to, like, okay, general principle, radical change is really hard and it's usually not successful. Incremental constant change is much easier, much more realistic, and much more sustainable. So I think when people try and make these radical changes, the reverberating negative effect is, I decided to do something. I was highly motivated. So that motivation ebb and flow was super high on January 1st because you know you got to make changes. So you're really motivated.
And everyone else is doing it.
So you're jumping on the bandwagon. But then as the motivation dwindles, you didn't design these behaviors well enough for them to be sustainable, and you stop being able to do it. So the back end of that is you now identify as a person who can't follow through on a target that you set.
You fail every time.
And that reduces your confidence to be able to make further changes, because you're just like, I'm not the kind of person who's able to change. I'm stuck with this. Mm-hmm. So it's one of these things where when we try and get people to do better behaviors, but we don't design them in the right way or don't help people execute these changes, it actually does big damage, because people start to identify as someone who cannot change their behavior. And you always can. And it's never a character or discipline or motivation problem. It's a behavior design problem. Mm-hmm. It's a big reason we're going to start offering behavior design consults as like one-on-one help to, and it's not to tell people how to do behaviors. It's not to tell people what behaviors to do, rather. It's how to help people be like behavior and habit ninjas. Like don't give them a fish. Don't give them the behavior they need to do. Teach them how to understand the psychology of how behaviors can be made to be sustainable. So it's going to be pretty exciting through, and that'll be done through Beam Tribe, but it's like, that's what people need, I think. And we've always, it's funny because like, I think I listened to a really old podcast. It was like from a year ago. And as physical therapy, I think it was the one talking about how our, or no, it was even from longer ago. But basically what we have always felt is we exist to help people change behaviors, right? We are physical therapists, but we're not there to help people heal from injuries. We're there to help people change their behaviors, which is how the injury gets healed. And more importantly, how the injury gets prevented. But it's people need help being able to understand how to change their behaviors, not just be told like the specific exercise to do for this specific injury. Mm-hmm. Because most of these injuries are actually factors of lifestyle. If you sit all day, I don't care what exercise they give you for your knee pain, we have to take care of the lifestyle element of how much time you spend sitting every day.
Yeah, or else we're just scraping the surface.
And I think it can be intimidating. Like, I think from a medical standpoint, it's intimidating. It's like, well, okay, it's a lifestyle problem, but how do you, like, lifestyle is huge. How do you change someone's lifestyle? It's too crazy. It's like, well, you can start really small. That's the key. There's
a built-in vibe that I have gotten from some doctors. It kind of like this frustration in terms of that they know it's lifestyle because they're smart people, but they're, it's... They don't think that it's, they're just like, that's the way it is. There's a, that's right. The way it is vibe that I,
that's then the that's way the way the person is going to be.
Oh, that's just, you know, these, yeah, like it's frustrating, you know,
bad thinking.
So it's, but that is, it shouldn't be left at that. Cause that's the kind of when you shift to more of the patchwork mode of treating people. And then right. Then we're back in the same mess that we're already in, which is
palliative care,
basically. Palliative care, big pharma, treating symptoms, pain meds, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, diets. So,
but I like, can you just imagine if physicians had an element of their curriculum be behavior design and understand how to guide people along to a better understanding of changing their behaviors or habits, or more importantly, help people get a better lens to look at life through in terms of what matters, right? Like what, someone came in with knee pain, you imagine the doctor's like, well, what matters to you? Like, what are the most important things in your life? And, you know, what are, you know, for example, what are behaviors that you're doing that you know you shouldn't be, or what are behaviors that you're not doing that you know you should be? And here are some examples of those. Okay, let's work. I'm on your team. Let's work to be able to incorporate some of these sustainably in your life, which might literally, and I think the next part we should go through is tiny little nano habits that can get you started, you know, for each pillar of health that can get you started making lifestyle changes. Because someone who wants to make the lifestyle change of moving more, like being more fit or exercising more, maybe the first behavior that they install is every time you take a pee, do a bodyweight squat.
Yeah.
That's the on-ramp to that path. It is not go work out for an hour at the gym every day. That's not the on-ramp.
No,
that is the path to failure, basically. So, yeah, I think there's so much potential in helping people change their lifestyle, because it's like we just underestimate how much our day-to-day behaviors have an effect on our health. We think the knee pain is because we're getting older, or is because we're, you know, we squatted wrong.
Yeah.
But it's like your knee pain is because of your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like, unless you got tackled in a football game and cracked your knee open in half, your knee pain that comes and goes and is getting worse is because of your lifestyle. It's because of your daily movement habits. It's not some weird thing that is a one-off that you need to take Tylenol for.
Yeah, and that can go, the same can be said for other things.
We need to put that out there.
Your mental health and everything too. It's like, yeah, it might sound controversial, but it's like your anxiety is coming from somewhere. It's not just a thing that happens. Yeah.
It's a signal somewhere that you need to listen to.
Like, yeah.
It's not something to be hidden or covered up.
Yeah, and it's not because you're born with lower, you know, serotonin levels and such. It's not.
Right.
And again, it might be related back to the way you actually grew up through your family. But again, it's not genetic. That can be. So, yeah, we need to kind of reframe everything from a medical standpoint. But knowing that it's a possibility is the first step. And
And we bias the cause of something to align with whatever solution we currently have. So if the only solution you have is medication, then you're going to look at it as, you're going to look at the cause as something that can be solved with medication.
Yeah.
Which fundamentally makes you not understand the problem.
We don't need technology to solve it.
No.
Medication is just technology. We don't need, and then we used more technology to cover up the side effects of the technology that we initially used.
So it's so whack. Anyway, lots of opportunity, put it that way. So let's finish this off by talking about little small habits or little small behaviors that you can adopt in each of these pillars of health. So for example, with movement, if someone's like, I want to be the kind of person that exercises or that moves, mm-hmm. you know, some examples that I had was do 3 bodyweight squats before every cup of coffee you drink. Do a bodyweight squat after you take a pee. Those are really easy. And, you know, the trend here is that each of these, you know, the positive behavior of doing a bodyweight squat or 3 or however many you want to do is always anchored to a behavior you have to do every day.
Yeah.
Because I think anchoring a habit you or a behavior you want to design and implement with something you already do is a really powerful prompt. Like the coffee develops into a prompt. The every time you take a pee turns into a prompt to do the bodyweight squats.
Yeah.
And at the start, it's an effort to remember these things, but eventually it's very easy. You know, like daily 5-minute walk in the morning.
Yeah.
That's a super easy behavior to upload. If someone says, I don't have time for that, what the hell are you spending your time on?
No, that's
like, there's no excuse, but you have to be the type of person that values health and sees walking as a behavior that a healthy person does in order for it to carry meaning and for you to want to do it. So it's all back to the same thing. Like, what matters to you?
That's the thing.
With food, what's an example of a tiny step someone could take with food?
Yeah, it could be anything. Well, a lot of it would be like, what do you buy? Right.
There you go.
Just like, going to the grocery store is a time to, that cues you to buy healthy things. And then the rest of your week is taken care of or,
right.
Yeah, it could be anything in terms of just like little steps, eating something that you normally wouldn't eat, you know,
or avoiding cooking, something that you normally would eat. Like even
cooking
like,
for yourself. If you cook for yourself, like not at all, then maybe you start with just cooking
one day a week.
You cook for yourself.
You cook for yourself and you cook a meal that has mainly vegetables.
Yeah.
Like that's a good start on ramp or even like something as simple. If you want even something smaller, that's really easy. It's like, okay, what's something you eat every day that you probably shouldn't be eating every day and don't get rid of it, but just make it way less obvious. So if it's in the front of the cabinet, if it's in the front of the fridge, hide it, put it in the back of the cabinet because just getting rid of the prompt. If every day you have a habit of looking in the pantry and the first thing you see is shitty food at the exact time when you get home from work where you need something to feel good, that prompt is going to reinforce that behavior all the time. So just removing the prompt, making that unhealthy food less visible can literally be the tweak you need to make in order to design depatterning that behavior. With sleep, you know, I'll go through a couple just real quick. With sleep, maybe it's avoid screens 30 minutes before bed. Maybe it's make a caffeine curfew where I don't have coffee after 12 noon anymore. Like those are tiny little tweaks
that can help. Push it back by 1 hour.
Exactly. Because if I am a person that values health and sleep is important for health, then I'm the kind of person who thinks it's important to not look at a screen 30 minutes before I go to sleep because I know that affects my quality of sleep. When it comes to the mind, if you value health and healthy people value something like a meditation practice, maybe starting with 30 seconds of meditation every day. So engineer a prompt into your day, an alarm on your phone, a meditation cushion somewhere that you have to pass by every day, and just sit down. Even if you're not even meditating, just sit down on the cushion for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That's starting to upload that habit slowly. And the fact that you're able to do it every single day is actually the reinforcement you need, the feel good, I'm winning at doing this behavior I wanted to do, that essentially hits control save and allows it to be really easy to upload that behavior. With community, maybe it's like, okay, next time I hang out with my friends, I'm not going to take my phone out. That's a really easy one. Anyone can do that. Just try it. You'll get way more from your interactions. So anyway, we hope that podcast opens up, gives you a broader perspective on the concept of lifestyle. You know, like anything with health, the best way to start is just to start, right? Pick what matters. Determine the kind of person you want to be and the values you want to have. Pick behaviors that align with those values. And then start to kind of troubleshoot how you can design little tiny behaviors that align with those values into your life. Mm-hmm. And record things so you can troubleshoot. You're not going to succeed in every single behavior goal that you have. But guess what? If you don't even pick a target, you're never going to hit the target. So you got to pick something. You got to start somewhere. So, you know, like I said, we're going to be offering behavior design consults in person and digitally through Beam Tribe at the end of this year. And I'm actually going to do a 5-video series on behavior design because I think it's such a cool concept. And it's so powerful when people know the fundamentals, the basics that like a 12-year-old could understand of how to become a behavior ninja. You can know how to troubleshoot behaviors you're trying to install that aren't working in a very fun, playful way, right? A lot of it boils down to play. You got to play with changing your behaviors instead of like
dosing.
Exactly.
Play around with, yeah, scaling, dosing, all that.
And people need to feel confident that they're capable of doing that so that they don't have to go to their health professional every time they want to change the way they're doing something.
Empower. You got to get, empowered is a big part of
exactly
this.
Know how the human mind works at a basic level and you understand how to kind of navigate it and mold it and basically create a new story for yourself. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that, you know, knowing that behavior, that lifestyle is inherited, I think removes a sense of guilt that people are doing the wrong thing because that's all they were exposed to.
Yeah. You're you because of your situation. But again, you can change your situation.
Exactly. If you just have the information and you have a little bit of ability to understand how change happens, doesn't happen radically, but it can happen if you know the path, and you know, we're going to do our best to provide help in order to be able to do that. But anyway, hopefully that benefits you. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.